Hello and welcome to the Fitness Mindset Podcast with Kate Newdecker. Today I'm joined by someone who's a very experienced online coach. She has a fantastic, straight to the point way of putting things across to people so that they will really understand it. She really understands the psychology behind nutrition, fat loss, having fitness habits that are sustainable, and I really, really love her content online. So I'm really pleased to be joined by Leslie Hooper today. Leslie, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. Wow, that was a hell of an introduction. I need you to come on all of my first dates with me.
I like to set it up well for people, you know. I like to give a good introduction. It's got to be done. You're worth it at the end of the day.
Yeah. Thank you. Absolutely. You are team self-esteem. I appreciate that.
No problem. So, Leslie, would you like to give the listeners a little bit of a background on what you do and why you do what you do?
Sure, absolutely. So, the fitness thing was actually not a natural path for me at all. I grew up a lifelong athlete, four brothers, so I was just kind of trying to fit in with what they were doing. I'm a big believer in you kind of become who you are closest to, or rather they influence you, right? So I grew up at home with four boys, and very much kind of an athletic environment, I would say, definitely involved in sports. And so, you know, the only way I could get my brothers to pay any attention to me was to kind of do what they were doing. And so there was a lot of basketball shooting in the front yard and in the back, a lot of baseball throwing. So I grew up in an athletic family, always kind of pursued athletics through college. I actually played some college ball, softball, moved to Park City, was snowboarding full-time on the weekends, a lot of rock climbing. So I've always just been kind of drawn to physical fitness in one capacity or another. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really think there was any money in fitness. And I never really considered it as a serious way to, it just wasn't a career path for me. So when I went to college, got involved in logistics, which was kind of my career at the time, and involved in logistics, ended up at the gym a lot, and got approached in a parking lot, coincidentally, by a couple that were like, hey, you look like you work out, are you a trainer? And I was like, no, I'm not a trainer, but I could train people. I've been lifting weights for, at that point, probably like 7 years. And so, yeah, I just ended up, they were my first clients, and worked with them for many years and in their community gym there in their neighborhood. And so other people in the neighborhood kind of ended up hiring me. That saw me in their community fitness center working with them. And so my side business just kind of grew from there. And obviously at that point, you know, I got certified and started attending fitness conferences. And then I started working with more serious athletes. I ended up working with Bria Ellinger, who's currently ranked number two in the world in women's jiu-jitsu and her category. So, like, yeah, my career just kind of took off with the in-person side hustle, but at the same time, I was still very much involved in my logistics career, right? But eventually, I started making decent money, and my heart was really in the fitness realm. I was really getting a lot of personal satisfaction or reward from that. And so it just propelled me into, posting content online. Like I said, continuing to further my education and started rubbing elbows with the right people in the industry. I got an awesome internship with Jordan Syatt out of New York City. So I moved to New York and boom, here we are, online fitness coaching, right? So
awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, you obviously, you're very involved in your clients' progress, and I can see that obviously in your content and what you put online, and making sure that they make decisions for the right reason. And I really love that you say that when people have a fitness goal, they, it needs to come from a place of positivity, so not like hating your body rather than making it want to be better. So have you seen any instances in the past where someone has perhaps been pursuing a goal, maybe even yourself, or maybe an aesthetic goal, and it has kind of backfired because the place that it's come from hasn't been a place of positivity?
I think 100%. Mm-hmm. Very rarely do I encounter a client who's operating from a place of, I love my body, and I just want to, like, make it better, right? Most people that seek professional help in kind of a deep, dark place
mm-hmm.
and realize that they can't pull themselves out of it. They need some help. So that's essentially what I do, is kind of help people rethink and I guess feel and interact with food and their body differently, see it in a more positive light, because when we're operating from a place of abundance,
yes,
instead of scarcity, magic happens. And so the first hurdle for me is always getting people to believe that they can do this, because the reality is most people who are struggling to lose weight and self-sabotage are doing so because deep down they don't actually believe it's possible. I mean, if you've been failing a diet for what, 10, 20, 30 years even, it's really hard to believe that this is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you really just need somebody in your corner on a daily basis who's there reminding you that they believe in you, that you are making progress, that these small daily wins are going to amount to something significant if you just stick with it. So, yeah, 100%. Everything that I do is geared towards helping people operate from a place of I'm a kick-ass person and
yeah.
I got this.
Yeah, and I think it's helping with that, just getting started for people. And people just have that issue with just getting it started in the first place. What do you think is the mindset behind what's stopping people just getting started in the first place, do you think? Is it self-esteem or is it other things at play as well?
Ultimately, I think it comes down to, as I just mentioned, a belief that it's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to believe that it is possible, right, when you've had so many attempts. I mean, what the average person attempts a fat loss program 3 to 4 times annually,
mm-hmm.
which is a lot of like failure and restart, right, in their minds, like,
yeah,
I'm not making any progress, but I'm going to try again. And so it's not that people don't want it. Clearly we have all the indicators that people are trying, but I think it's really hard to make much progress when you're operating from a place of I can't rather than a place of I can.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just kind of getting through your own bullshit, right?
Yeah.
Like these self-limiting scripts that we have in our minds about ourselves. Oh, I have like genetic problems, or I'm aging, or like whatever script you have on a loop in your mind that's preventing you from moving forward. That's what is preventing you from moving forward, right? So
yeah.
Ultimately, it's kind of helping clients and just readers in general strip all these beliefs about themselves away. These excuses, essentially, is what it boils down to. And then starting, I think, ultimately, people feel really helpless and, you know, they've made progress before, but quit for whatever reason. It's hard to get started again, especially if you've lost weight and then regained it. I mean, it's demoralizing. It's hard because you know how much of an uphill climb it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so just getting started is definitely the hardest part, but that's why I'm a big believer in just doing something, anything.
Yeah.
As I say, no 0 days. Like, you've got to do something, whether it's read one chapter or do 10 squats or eat a vegetable. I don't care what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But every single day, there needs to be something that is bringing you a step closer to your goal, because that's motivating, right? People kind of wait for motivation to slap them upside the back of the head. They're looking to read a meme or watch a YouTube video, but that's not how motivation works. We know that motivation doesn't kick in until after you take action.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure you've been there, Kate. You've been in the gym, didn't want to go, but your motivation doesn't kick in. Like, after a set or two, you're good, right?
Yeah, like, absolutely. It's quite frequent. I do say that to people where, like, I'm probably like, I love training. I love fitness. Mm-hmm. I enjoy it. But at the same time, there are a lot of times where I don't want to do it, but I just do it by autopilot, you know?
Exactly.
And I think people don't get that. People don't think that it's, I think it's because they see us really enjoying it and thinking, oh, they're hitting PBs all the time. They're loving it. They're doing tons of burpees. They must really like it every day. They're always really motivated. But we're not, you know. We go through the motions a lot as well. But like you say, it's building up those small habits that are just no 0 days is really cool, because it's not like it's the no days off kind of thing, team no days off. It's just like making sure you're doing one small thing. And like you say, that can be eating vegetables, that can be, it can be anything pretty minimal. If it's your personal development, like you say, reading a chapter or something like that, that's going to help as well. And I think as well, this can kind of get people started and get them over that initial barrier. Say if people have got over that initial barrier and they've got started, what would you say, how do you recommend people deal with resistance from their peers, like family, friends, who, when people try to change and lose weight, how people don't like that? Like, why do you think people don't like that? And how can people get over that resistance from people?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. I think people don't like that because it just illuminates their own failures mm-hmm. in their individual lives, right? It's uncomfortable to watch people kicking ass and succeeding in a place where you have failed mm-hmm. numerous times. And so it's the classic crab in a bucket mentality that we see. Ultimately, we don't like seeing other people succeed where we have failed. So there's a lot of negative comments that happen. I mean, your coworker, Beth, might make a snide remark about you bringing in another salad to work or whatever the case may be. Right? Like, it's just kind of a lot of passive aggressive comments. But ultimately, the way I encourage my clients to deal with it is see it as more from a place of being empathetic. Because these people are hurting. Like, ultimately, they are not happy with where they're at. And they feel a need to kind of bring you down, but it's really just a reflection of their own mentality more than it has anything to do with your course of action. Mm-hmm. So, it's just, it's not about you. And what people think of you ultimately is really none of your business anyway. If you have a goal, focus on that and put your head down. Keep moving forward.
Yeah, I love that saying that's like, it's just not about you. Half the stuff that goes on, or more, is just not about you, and it's not aimed at you. And dealing with things with this empathy, like you say, it just eliminates any dwelling on it as well. You just think, well, if you're feeling bad for someone because they're insecure about something, then you're not going to be angry about it. It kind of evaporates that. So I really like that. Just remembering it's not about you and just cracking on, really. I think that's a good way to overcome it as well. There's quite a lot of people who maybe they deal with mindless eating and mindless snacking. It's really common. And obviously in the workplace, it's super common as well. And why do you think this happens, that people mindlessly eat? What's one of the main contributors, would you say, to it, would you say?
I mean, ultimately, it can come down to a few different things. Emotional eating, right? People who have been using food as a crutch to kind of avoid uncomfortable feelings that surface in their lives. Mm-hmm. It's a distraction. Habit is another reason people tend to kind of mindlessly eat. I mean, look, I don't know about you, but I'm very much a Pavlov's dog, in the sense that I will walk to my mom's house, or walk through the doors of my mom's house, and it's so automatic for me to go into the kitchen and open up the pantry and refrigerator. It's mindless. Like, it's robotic. It's an out-of-body experience.
Why does this happen at mom's houses? Me and my sister talk about this. We don't do it anywhere else, and then we go to our mom's house, and literally we go straight to the cupboard, and there's always crisps. There's always, like, something going on, and we always go to do it. Like, and my mum says it about us.
Whether you're hungry or not, it doesn't matter. If you just ate, like, 10 minutes before. Absolutely. Yeah. It's just, like I said, it's a Pavlov's dog thing. You walk through mom's threshold, and, like, the wheels are in motion. It's game over. Because that is habit. And it probably stems from, in my case, if I can kind of reference back to my earliest days of thinking through that, is when I came home from school every day, and I would kind of have a snack. That was like the automatic thing for me for years, clearly, right? Yeah. So it is mindless. And so I think mindless eating just happens for emotional reasons, boredom, loneliness. I mean, food is a comfort. And a lot of the time, we don't want to feel uncomfortable things, right? That's why we're so heavily medicated nowadays. It's just an escape in a lot of ways to avoid uncomfortable feelings. And so what's an easy, convenient replacement for that? Food. And we always know exactly what we're going to get from food, right? It never, like, calls us a fat ass. Like, it's always kind of there. It doesn't judge us or ridicule us. Like, we know what we're, it's a safe place for us to go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's predominantly why people reach for food. Mindless eating happens in the car. It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because, especially environmentally nowadays, right? Like, food is... convenience foods are everywhere. It's just we're constantly being stimulated, marketed to for those reasons. And so our environment has got a bit more suggestive than what we should be eating. And we've also become really impulsive with our eating.
Yeah. And I think as well, it is omnipresent. Food is omnipresent. We obviously live in a world where it's gonna be there all the time. So people tend to have trigger foods as well, and the certain foods that they think, oh, I can't have it in the house, otherwise I'm gonna eat all of it. So then they eliminate it and they keep it out of the house, and then it's kind of that thing of you want what you can't have, and then it's called a trigger food. And you've mentioned this before about dealing with trigger foods. How do you recommend for people to deal with trigger foods, to bring them back into their diet so they can have a bit more of a less stress around these foods?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think when it comes to trigger foods, we need to understand how
mm-hmm.
or why those are a thing for us. Trigger foods are basically when we attach meaning or value to a specific food, right? Like, we feel differently about ice cream than we do chicken and broccoli.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason for that. It's because we put it on a pedestal, we deemed it special, or we've attached, like, fear to it, right? So it has like this all this weird kind of emotional attachment to it that other foods don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so we purposefully will do things, in my opinion, which are not helpful, like the advice of just remove it from your home. For me, no. I want to be able to go to any dining scenario. I want to be around any food and feel absolutely in control.
Mm-hmm.
By removing it from your home, I don't think that's encouraging you to overcome your fear of food, right? Like, it's just kind of exacerbating the problem. So that's kind of like the 1.0 version. The 2.0 version for me is educating my clients on how to overcome their fear of these foods by, yes, incorporating them into their lives. I mean, there's a lot of research that should suggest the way to overcome a fear is to confront it. So rather than run from it, we kind of want to introduce it back into our lives. And so a practice I use with my clients, because I work with primarily clients who have a dysfunctional relationship with food, binge eaters, emotional eaters, you know, people that, I guess, ultimately, most of us really do have some emotional ties to food. But for my binge eaters in particular, they seem to be the ones who really struggle with this the most. And it really is a practice of exposure. And so I will challenge them, all right, let's come up with a list of foods that make you uncomfortable. Like, when's the last time you gave yourself permission to eat a cheeseburger or a slice of pizza or chocolate? Because a lot of people don't want to eat these foods. They don't bring them into their homes, right? But, like, it's the deprivation that causes us to do the overeating, the binge eating. It's the feeling of, again, scarcity. I can't have this versus I can have this. And I can always have more later. So when we're feeling deprived, that leads us to do a lot of overeating. Because, again, operating from last supper mentality, I better eat everything I can right now because tomorrow it's back to the boring chicken broccoli diet mentality, right? But if you start to introduce these foods into your daily diet by just having one or two and, like, incorporating it into your meal.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not overeating, right? You're just being honest with yourself.
Yeah.
I do actually want to eat pizza. I do actually want to eat ice cream. Okay, cool. Now we're being honest with ourselves. Now we can start incorporating it into our daily life and our daily calorie intake or whatever and not gain weight. And the other aspect of it is we don't, again, kind of need to take it to an extreme if we're eating it daily, because again, we know we can have more later, right? It's when we're operating from, ah, shit, I totally failed at this, like, I shouldn't have had this, I'm gonna go ahead and eat the entire pizza now because tomorrow, again, it's back to dieting, right? Yeah. So it's just giving yourself permission. That mental switch is a game changer because you're operating, again, from a place of abundance versus scarcity. And when scarcity and deprivation and restriction are on the table, that's when the overeating happens, period. Yeah. Like, that's it.
Yeah, it's like when you say to someone, right, don't think of this one thing. Don't think of polar bears. Someone's going to think of polar bears because you're trying not to so much. So if you're trying to, like, not think of chocolate, you're going to think about chocolate all the time.
Well,
so,
the human brain is wired that way.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Our brain doesn't know the difference between stressors and life. Mm-hmm. It doesn't know if some jackass cut us off on the road on the way into work or... You know, if your boss made a passive-aggressive comment, like, our brain just understands stress. And so when we tell it, hey, you need to be on the lookout for this, suddenly it's like a watchdog, and it's like, okay, I'm going to sit by the window and, like, wait for this problem to, like, happen. And so giving yourself the permission to eat it, right, like, suddenly that goes away, and so we're not on the lookout for it all the time.
I think it's so, I find it so incredibly interesting, especially if someone's built up that habit of having the apprehension and stress around that food. And then say, if, like you say, they've got that Pavlov dog habit of then getting stress and dealing with the stress with food, it's a cycle. And I think it really does take having someone like a coach to show it to them from the outside and break the cycle. It's so hard to do for people to do on their own. I mean, they're 100% capable of doing it on their own. They are.
Yeah, they are, because you don't know what you don't know. And mm-hmm. so what we are kind of immersed in diet culture, pretty much every book you pull off the shelf mm-hmm. is going to tell you to avoid sugar for fat loss.
Yeah.
And so that's what they're doing, right? And then it's like taking these extreme measures like keto, where it's like, okay, well, I'm never going to eat a carb again for the rest of my life. It's like, get out of here.
We
exist in a world with carbs and sugar. Like, you're going to have to learn how to interact with them without eating like an asshole. So basically, reel it in and, like, let's figure this out. But as you said, most people really don't know how to do that because they're too far in the rabbit hole. They don't see, like, beyond, like, the big picture, basically.
Yeah, they don't see the big picture, and they're so immersed in, like you say, diet culture and loads of books. And I think it does feed on people's insecurities somewhat as well, especially if they've got that mentality of, I can't lose weight, I'm helpless about this. And then they're given that quick solution, and then that's why they use that quick solution. And then it's a cycle again. And it's very unfortunate that that's obviously the way the diet industry works and how it makes money. But obviously, that's what we just try and cut through for people bit by bit. We can't change the world,
the diet and food industry have to make money somehow. And selling, like, a calorie deficit is not nearly, I mean, that's not marketable, right? So they have to keep repackaging deficit with
in a different
whatever
way
that they can create it. I mean, we've seen, I made a post the other day about how at one point in the game, it was like, don't eat any fat, and then it was like, all right, well, let's shift gears and go to low carb. And then it was like, well, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. And then it was like, oh, well, actually, we shouldn't be eating anything after 8 p.m. at night. And it's just like, it's constant. They're always repackaging and reselling it, what is essentially just a calorie deficit. That's it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't sell. Yeah,
well, I think people have tried to now repackage calorie deficit, especially on social media, and sell calorie deficit as in you just need a calorie deficit. And while that is, it's true, we know there's so many more components that go towards achieving that calorie deficit for people. So
it's mostly their own mental barriers, right?
Yeah.
Like, that seems to be the solution for every problem. Oh, you lack motivation? Well, you just need to probably calorie count harder. You know, that's not helpful. That's
not
really digging people out of the psychological issues they're having. It just makes them feel like a failure.
Yes.
Which is not, like, motivating. It's not encouraging at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, great. I'm going to go for a calorie deficit. I'll go for 600 calories a day then. You know, it's not, people can go the other way with it if they take a tiny piece of information and roll with it. It's giving enough information for people so that they can really make it actionable, and it's not going to potentially be harmful for them, really, which yes. is difficult. And I think that is probably why some coaches go down those routes of trying to make it very simple for people.
Yeah, I mean, in my program, we don't do calorie counting at all.
Yeah.
The first step in my program is delete MyFitnessPal app from your phone. And then number two, if you have an emotional attachment to a scale, remove it from your home. Like, we're not doing that because this is about learning sustainable habits that are going to help you for the rest of your life. And I don't see calorie counting as a lifelong strategy.
Mm-hmm. No,
so most people who knock on my door have been calorie counting for years. They know what a healthy portion looks like. That's not the problem. Information mm-hmm. is a lack of information is not the problem, right? It really comes down to trusting yourself, learning how to navigate healthy eating without all of the crutches or training wheels, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it's and the thing is with the MyFitnessPal, with the tracking, with all of that is really running before you can walk a lot of the time. And like you say, having those just having a little bit more structure to your eating, and people know what looks like a healthy meal, but it's mm-hmm. not. But there's other reasons behind it, and it's really helping that person find what those reasons are for themselves, which is obviously what you're very good at helping people do. Now, you obviously have a lot of empathy with your clients, and I can see that. And you've raised a family yourself, and you've obviously juggled a job, and you've obviously had your own fitness goals. And do you find it hard then when people have excuses of not having enough time and that kind of thing? Oh, I've got kids. And obviously you've done that yourself. Do you ever get frustrated with people's excuses?
I don't think frustrated is the right word. I would be in the wrong line of work if I got frustrated by every excuse.
Yeah, you'd be insane.
Like, because they are everywhere, right?
Yeah.
But I think ultimately what makes me, if I could toot my own horn here, what makes me good at what I do mm-hmm. is my fact, or look, there's a certain kind of client that seeks me out. It's because I'm a no mm-hmm. bullshit kind of person, right? Yeah. And I'm going to call you on it.
Yeah.
And so if I do see a lot of excuses, I will point them out to a client and be like, that's what you're feeling right now, right? Like, you have this belief in your mind, and that's your barrier, that's your wall. So we need to deconstruct it. I don't get upset by it. I'm just trying to do a job here, and people hire me to help them understand why they're struggling, detach from their emotional ties to eating, mm-hmm. and overcome their binge eating tendencies and get into amazing shape, like the best shape of their lives, without feeling restricted and being able to go to happy hour with their friends and be able to lose weight while traveling, which is like my whole problem with calorie counting. It's a great mm-hmm. educational tool. Mm-hmm. Everybody should do it for a certain period of time, but eventually we really do have to start to rely on ourselves. So getting back to the excuses thing, 90% of our own barriers and obstacles and why we're not seeing the progress that we want is because, again, we have like this belief system on a loop in our mind, and it really kind of takes somebody like yourself or me who could see objectively what's going on mm-hmm. to give them like the proverbial shoulder shake and be like, look, you know, let's actually deconstruct these excuses and help you see what the real obstacles are.
Yeah.
And so, it's not something that upsets me. I'm paid to do a job, and my job is to help people succeed, and I get laser focused on that.
Yeah.
And so,
helping
people kind of see their bullshit is my thing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's tough love in a way. And I don't think, I think some people, obviously, when you do lay out the truth in front of them, that initially, I've had it initially, where people initially, they really don't like that. They don't like it. And then they come back and they say, oh, okay, actually, yeah, I see it now. And it's just that initial, but you've just shown them the truth, you know, and it's because we care. And it's not from a place of just like being angry at people. It's just literally because we care and we want to help them. So you've been coaching people in the industry for a while now, and I've seen it over the years, obviously being slightly more, especially with personal trainers, more male personal trainers, and And I've seen a lot of females become coaches over the years too, which is really, really awesome. And I think sometimes female coaches can be like, oh, there's a lot of adversity towards female coaches. It's very difficult. There's a lot of competition. But I like to look at it like positive sides of it, and there's also like perks. Would you say that there's more of an even split now? And would you say that there's positives to being a female coach?
You know what, I gotta be honest with you, really don't pay attention to what anyone else is doing, so like kind of what's going on in the industry, I am so out of the loop. I'm so busy with my own clients and my own personal and professional goals that I can't be distracted with what everybody else is doing. I know is I just put my head down and get to work. I will say, when I first got into online coaching, I was working with a lot more men than I was women, which is ironic because that's really uncommon in the fitness space that a woman coach be working with predominantly a male-dominated clientele, right? But that was kind of where I started. And it's since evolved since I've been able to develop a larger following on Instagram. I don't know if that's just because – I really don't know what's behind that. Maybe the topics that I cover are to be honest, I just think that men in general are not as likely to seek out professional help, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they kind of have, there's a bit of a stigma about that, or maybe a bit of an ego or something attached to that, to where reaching out for help isn't as big of a deal. But I also think that my message has evolved over time. But I think the more the merrier. Look, anytime that there are people in the field that are looking to help others in a meaningful way, that doesn't require kind of selling their soul to the devil by pushing a bunch of bullshit on people. That's just really not going to help them move forward. I mean, there's a reason why I don't really get into supplements, or you don't see any marketing on my page. Mm-hmm. None. Because I am not about getting a quick buck. I'm more interested in helping people long term. I don't do 30-day challenges. I don't do quick, rapid 12-week programs. Like, I want people to be able to look at my clients from 5 years ago and be like, holy shit, they lost their weight and they're maintaining it. And not only are they maintaining it, but like, they look better than they did 5 years ago, right? When so the goal is to always be leaving people better off than when I found them through a long-term strategy that works for them.
Yeah.
So other people in the industry, I mean, you know, ultimately it's none of my business. I'm just working on my thing.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to look at it, because being a coach is very time consuming, in that there's no set hours, in that it's not like it's 9 to 5 and then you clock off. It's like, if someone needs your help, they need your help now. So there's really not much time to really think about what anyone else is doing. So I really, really respect that. That's super, super cool. So yeah, I think, I really respect it. It's really, really cool. So, I mean, it's something that I've seen, obviously, a little bit in the industry, but maybe I am a bit more preoccupied with what's going on in the industry. So I should just keep my head down more.
Hey, no judgment, but you'll notice that I follow very few people, and pretty much everybody that I follow in the fitness industry are people that I know in person.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that. It's because I feel like other people's content is primarily a distraction for what I'm trying to create. And my goal, my focus is my clients. It's not what other people are doing. I don't want to also get caught in like the comparison trap, right?
No,
like,
absolutely.
I'm very protective about who I allow to influence me.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why I don't follow a lot of accounts that I used to follow, because ultimately I walked away from their posts feeling worse about myself than I felt better about, and like encouraged about myself. And so as soon as I started noticing which accounts were kind of leaving me with that icky feeling like I'm a failure, or just, you know, discomfort in any level, I was like, you know what, I really don't need this kind of negativity in my life, right? Nice. So I just delete, and you never think about it, because most people are following like 8,000 people, and I whittled mine down to, I don't know, around maybe 200 or something, and half of them are like friends and family, and the other half are fitness professionals that I do know, respect their work, and 90% I would say I met in person, have a physical like a relationship with outside of just fitness, I guess is what you could say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you do have to protect your space, you know, you do have to protect what you consume. And that goes in all realms, whether it's social media, whether it's people you spend time with. And I think going back to what you said at the very beginning of like being a part of the very few people that you spend time with, you're going to be very affected by that. So you need to really protect it, like you said.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, kind of like rounding it up a little bit now, and I always like to ask for the guests to give three actionable tips for the listeners to take away with them. So that would be in terms of their fitness, their nutrition, their mindset, three things that are really going to help them make their progress a little bit better, and they can be any ones that you want.
Okay, so that's a little tough. Like I said, I think ultimately no 0 days, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's a no-brainer to me.
Yeah.
Really just doing something, no matter how simple or small, every single day to bring you closer to your goal is ultimately the path that everyone should be on, whether your goal is fitness related or not, professional. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have goals myself that have nothing to do with fitness at this point in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't matter. You'll notice if you follow me on Instagram, like I post content every single day, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's something that I have to do because it brings me closer to my professional goals. And same thing in my relationship with food. I still to this day will eat something almost daily that's what we identified earlier as like a trigger food, because I have a disordered past with feeling out of control around certain foods. And so I make sure that I eat them daily. That brings me a step closer to my goal. So just new 0 days. One thing, I think another thing that's hugely important is dropping the perfectionist mindset.
Yes.
The fact that we think that this is going to be a perfect endeavor, that we're never going to slip up, that we're never going to fail, that Monday, for whatever reason, has magical powers and we have to wait until then to turn it around. As James Clear says, kind of never miss twice, right? So that's a big one that I push on, or I shouldn't say push, but like really encourage my clients to, a concept that I encourage them to grasp is, just because you make a mistake or there's a slip up or you're feeling guilty about overeating, who cares? Like if you're doing this for the rest of your life, like who gives a shit about one instance of overeating on a Tuesday afternoon? Like ultimately it really just comes down to consistency, right? So we can't get hung up on day 7 if you had 6 days of like amazing eating before them. Let's focus on the wins, the 6 days. That's pretty amazing, right? Yeah. Instead of getting really bogged down by this one instance on day 7 where things didn't go quote unquote perfectly. Perfect is kind of an unrealistic goal anyway. So you're just setting yourself up for failure. And then I would say 3, look, we all make better decisions in life if we're exercising regularly.
Yeah.
Get outside, get some sunshine in your life. I don't care if it's walking around the block, doing some squats in the gym. Ultimately, you get to kind of decide what your perfect, or like just get out of your own head, right? Exercise is great for that. So I think by being active, it automatically allows you to want to eat better, right? We generally make better decisions if we respect ourselves. And I think a good way to demonstrate that we value and respect ourselves is by exercising, because it just really shows that you give a shit about yourself. So exercise, no 0 days, and never miss twice. Like remove the perfectionist mindset.
Yeah, I think those are some fantastic ones that people can just apply to them. But people forget, you know, people forget these things, and we do find ourselves repeating ourselves a lot, obviously, these particular points as well. But to be honest, people forget them, and it's so important to reiterate it in as many ways as possible for people. So, very last question. What is the best mindset advice you've ever received?
Yeah, I don't think it's from like a specific individual, right? I think it's just kind of connecting the dots in my own life and being open to hearing different messages from a wide variety of people who I admire, and find to fulfill the role of what I define as successful. And one thing that I've learned is they take responsibility for their life and everything in their life. Whether it's a breakup, whether it's a missed workout, whether it's not getting the job that you interviewed for, right? Like ultimately, we are responsible for everything that happens in our life. And most people are really turned off by that message because that's uncomfortable to hear, right? Like, because we all have failures in our life. And that's an uncomfortable truth to face. But the reality is, I find it very liberating because that means I have absolute control over everything that happens in my life. So maybe some things don't go the way that I anticipate or want, but you never fail if you're learning, right? So you either win or learn. And so I think the biggest mental shift that has helped me in my life is like, just embracing the idea that everything that happens is the result of me. And so if I don't like the way something is unfolding in my life, it's 100% within my control to reroute. And ultimately, I get to call the shots. And I love that because 9 times out of 10, look, I'm pretty self-motivated and self-interested, right? So I'm going to make the best decisions I can possibly for myself. But that's because I'm operating from a place again of like abundance and not scarcity anymore, right? Like I'm not afraid to fail. Failure is to me a big part of learning and opportunity, and so I embrace that.
That's super, super powerful, and I think it's empowering for people to hear that they can take ownership of their situation, and it cuts through that feeling of helplessness. If people know that the situation they're in, they're responsible for, exactly like you say. So I think that's a really powerful piece of advice from you, Leslie. So thank you so much
Thanks.
for that. So where can people find you on social media to find more of your helpful content, Leslie?
Yeah, so I'm pretty easy to find. My name is Leslie Hooper with an H, and Leslie Hooper.com is where I can be found on my website, and then you can always find me on Instagram, which is where the bulk of my content occurs, which is Hooper.fit.
Perfect. So, Leslie, thank you so, so much for coming on the podcast. You've shared so much incredible information. I knew you would, so that's why I invited you on, because I thought you'd really share some really important information for people. So thank you so, so much for that. And if you've been listening to the show and you found it really helpful, make sure you screenshot it, share it, rate, subscribe, and hope you've enjoyed listening. And Leslie, thank you so much for coming on.
Kate, thanks so much for having me. It was a lot of fun. Appreciate it.